This is episode 48.
48. Oh, it's so great.
Every goddamn time, Shireen.
It's fun to rhyme.
I know. This episode, I'm going to talk a little about the Iran World Cup soccer team and about sanctions that are affecting the team's ability to get equipment.
Yes, and I'm going to be talking about the zero tolerance policy that Trump instituted for children that were coming here illegally with their parents and what's happening to these children after they're separated from their parents and what this means for everybody. So listen up.
What a goddamn great time.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are ethnically ambiguous.
Okay.
Are we rolling?
We're rolling. We're rolling. We're rolling on episode 40. Anna, 40.
Eight.
Eight, you're right. Nice. 48. I can't believe we're 48 years old, everybody.
Wow, those 40s flew by.
48. So great. Masturbate.
Mm. What?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's the word I thought of to rhyme.
You is what you is, yeah. And I.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
This is episode 48. A lot has happened, I feel like, this week.
A lot has happened.
A lot. happy belated Ramadan, Eid Mubarak. The end of Ramadan happened last week after
Eid.
Recorded.
Eid. Everybody, Eid.
So Eid al-Fitr is the holiday that happens after Ramadan's over, after Muslims fast from sunrise till sunset for a full month. Eid al-Fitr is like the holiday of breaking your fast, like feasting and stuff, and you gather with your family, and it's a great old time. So for everyone that celebrated, happy Eid. Yeah. What was your week like, Anna?
It was...
You went home, right?
I did go home.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for reminding me. Oh, what a weekend with my father. You guys, my dad's crazy. I think I tweeted a little about it. I now have many Persian rugs. I also was given some more tapestries that don't really have anywhere to hang just yet.
And it was also Father's Day this past weekend, too. So it was cool that you're with your dad.
Sure. Just kidding. It was great. It was fine. I mean, my dad's my dad. He's, you know, my dad. He's crazy. You know, I was given food. I'm an idiot. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to remember what happened. I have to honestly go look at my Twitter to see what I tweeted about to remind myself what my life was like a week ago. Because, hey, guys, that's how it is when you work a lot. You remember literally nothing. Yeah. Like, I don't remember yesterday. Oh, I watched some soccer with my dad. World Cup is happening.
Woo-hoo!
Great times. Watch some games. My father said, Brazil is not what it used to be, like 55 times.
My older sister graduated from medical residency like 2 weekends ago. So my parents drove up here for that and we like spent the weekend together. So we saw them 2 weekends ago, but I wasn't able to see my dad for Father's Day, which bummed me out. But I did like browse through old photos of him and like reminisced and sent them to my family. And it was just, we were together via text message, but I love my dad.
That's nice.
Yeah. I wish I was with him in person, but.
I ate some gourmet sabzi, which was delicious, which is like the national dish of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of fun. You know, I hung out with friends for a little. I got an iPhone 10, which was hassle because if you've ever, I'm like on my parents' family plan.
Same here.
Phone wise, because my dad's my dad and that's just how things go.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to upgrade my phone, but which I could easily go buy a phone, but because it was with the plan, it was like a whole thing, like my parents' plan. So I just needed my dad there to like authorize it.
Yeah.
Because I could pay for the phone myself, whatever.
Yeah.
It was just so hard to get my dad to just do this simple thing because he just like can't. and he has to like go and talk to AT&T for 10 years.
I think Middle Eastern people families love family just, plans.
They also plans. Like don't trust anything, which is fine. You don't have to. All these companies, corporate companies, are the devil. But it was just so hard to, like, also my dad, like, terrorized an AT&T by being like, you know, you guys bought this other company, the merger, my stock is still down.
Oh, my
though.
God. Like the employee stock won't do anything about
these
it.
These motherfuckers don't know anything about AT&T stock. They do not care.
Yeah.
He's, like, pulling up his stock app and, like, showing them things and being like, dividends. Mr. And I'm like, Dad, nobody cares. Let's go. And we were there for like an hour longer than we needed to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got an iPhone 10.
Wow. I'm looking at it right now. It's very nice and shiny.
There's definitely a learning curve.
I don't know if I like having a home button.
It's trippy. You have to get used to it.
I like having a home
button. I'm triggered. Just joking. But yeah, it's a whole thing. And Persian fathers, Middle Eastern fathers, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they love family plans.
Also, they just takes them forever. Like, my dad is like, well, I need to talk to them for 10 years. And then the scammer got basically another free iPhone 10 based off my deal.
What?
So I was like, oh, cool, it really actually worked out for you. what a fucker. Anyway, that's what it's like spending the weekend with my father. A lot of, like, confusion. We ate some kebab, of course,
my
as
dad
you do.
My dad loves kebab. My dad's favorite things are kebab and hummus.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
My dad really likes... My dad likes to barbecue every weekend, make kebab. That's
his
thing.
We used to do that all the time. It's been a while.
I saw my mommy. My little mommy.
Mm-hmm.
She was chilling.
Yeah. Family time is always really nice. I liked spending time with my parents when they were up here. They don't really come to LA that much.
My parents are very, if you're Persian, you know this, they tend to sometimes, my mom especially becomes a little tad-off-y, and that's tad-off, excuse me, burping, but basically it's like the concept where they just keep offering you something, mm-hmm. and you're like, no, I'm fine. They'd be like, but are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? And you're like, no, I'm fucking fine! And you're like losing your mind, and my mom does that a lot sometimes with like food or like,
oh, for sure,
drink,
food.
And you're like, oh my god, please
it's,
stop.
It's like a customary like politeness generosity thing.
Yeah, but when it's your own parents, sometimes you just like feel like your nerves are bursting in your eyeballs and you're just like, can you stop?
And even if you asking? Say no, even if you say no, she'll probably give it to you anyway.
Yeah. Like on my way out, I was trying to leave and she kept being like, do you want some of this to take with you? Do you want some of this to take with you? Do you want some of this to take with you? I was like, Mom, my car is like packed to the brim. I can't take more stuff.
Yeah, but it's just their way of caring about you and being loving, you know?
Do you know how much bread I have at my house now?
Pita bread.
So much. I rolled through with so much pita bread. Luckily, she gave me some gorma sabzi to take with me and some rice.
What is gorma sabzi?
It's like this stew that's like with a bunch of like greens.
I saw a photo of it. I should know what it was.
Yeah, it's got like kidney beans in it. And then it has like...
Like spinach or something?
Well, sabzi means like greens. Like things of the greens of nature. Like veggie greens.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I can tell you exactly what's in it right now. Okay. So, actually, it's very interesting because gorma sabzi, it's not as green in Iran. Like, the gorma sabzi I have in Iran is a little lighter. It's a little more brown. But anyway, there's cilantro, parsley, chives, and then fenugreek, which... I don't even know where one gets fenugreek. 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 Greek. G-R-E-E-K. And it also has pinto beans, or you can do kidney beans, or you can even do black-eyed beans. Not to be confused with the band.
You can't call those guys a band.
Yeah. Okay. But it also, you can put, like, meat into it. Some people put lamb. Some people put, like, beef chunks. It depends on your, like,
that sounds
taste.
Good. Yeah.
And then they also put dried limes in there.
Mm.
Which
and you eat it with pita bread?
You can eat it with pita bread. Most people eat it with like rice or tadik, which is like the crust underneath the rice. Which is mostly just hard, like fried bread kind of.
Yeah, like hardened bread.
Yeah.
Crust bread.
It's weird. I'm so not used to describing Persian food in English. It's very
it's weird. Yeah.
It also like mentally doesn't translate. Like I'm like
it really doesn't.
Yeah. I guess technically that's what it is.
Yeah.
But in my mind, it doesn't translate to English.
No. Same with Arabic for me. Like there are some words that I just think in Arabic in, and like I just can't translate them. No. Whether it's about food or like there's this one word, like when you're carrying a lot of things and you can't manage, yeah, that I always think about. It's mafini istahkim, and I can never translate that in English. Like I'll just say it out loud when I'm trying to explain myself, and there are just some words that are just that you can't explain.
Yeah, I think just the conceptually same with food. It doesn't make sense to you because you've never had to say that in English.
Yeah, and there are some words that my sisters and I will only use in Arabic. Like we don't call like a headband, we call them like an ulse. Like we never to each other we'll always call like a hairbrush in Arabic or a hairband in Arabic. I think it's just like it just makes when I think of that object, I think of it in Arabic.
Yeah,
it's just so weird. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, like I wouldn't even know how to say the Persian food names in English.
Yeah, same.
Like I was struggling how to say sabzi. I just call it greens because in my mind I picture a bowl full of like green, like veggies. Technically they're veggies, but it feels like different than veggies. It's like herbs, but like I've just blown my own mind.
I'm pretty sure there's a dish in Syria or like the Middle East. It's called mulhiye. And it uses like a spinach looking green, but it's not spinach. And there was one year that my mom was like trying to track down what this green was in English because she had never tried to look for it in English like market. But she had no idea what mulhiye was in English. And we didn't know what it was. It wasn't spinach. It wasn't kale. It wasn't chard or anything. And I don't even remember what it was in the end. I feel like it must have been fenugreek or something because that sounded familiar when you said that.
Fenugreek. I've never actually even thought about that word in any English concept.
But anyways, it's
an annual plant in the family Fabaceae.
Well, I don't think it's fenugreek, the one I'm thinking of.
Which leaves consisting of three small obovate to oblong leaflets. It is cultivated worldwide as a semi-arid crop.
Yeah, fenugreek wasn't the one that I was thinking of, but there are definitely words like that are just like, I just can't, like, za'atar, like, za'atar is, like, a very trendy thing now in, like, some Middle Eastern or, like, Hebrew restaurants. It's, like, this crushed up herb. It's green. And for the longest time, I didn't know it was just fucking oregano. Like,
oh, really?
Like, I was, like, I just thought it was, like, I just didn't know what it was. And then I looked it up and it was, oh, this is oregano.
Well, that's, like, sumo. It's, like, that red.
Sumac, right?
Is that what it is in English? Sumac?
Yeah, it's like spelled sumac. I don't know.
Okay, so I guess in Farsi, my parents... Yeah, that's what it is. It's... Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
You guys say sumac?
In English. I mean, I don't...
Oh,
in,
oh okay.
Well, no, in Arabic, it's sumac.
Okay. So in Farsi, they call it like sumo.
Huh, interesting. But also, no, wait.
Sumac.
Correction. Za'atar is a mix of thyme and oregano. And also, thyme and oregano are like... almost the same thing. They're just like different, like varies particular variant of the species. But for the longest time, I thought za'atar was like only in the Middle East. And then I came here, and for like 4 years ago, I realized it for the first time that it's just like dried oregano and dried thyme. So
that's a trip. Yeah, I don't understand what any of this stuff is now that I have to say it in English.
Yeah, it's wild. Growing up bilingual is just like that sometimes.
Sumok.
For me, it's sumat.
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 Yeah, it's weird.
But it's we're like a very, sumo.
Yeah. I like sumo. It's like sumo wrestling.
But there's like this, like, almost like the hidden K at the end. Like
sumo. Same. For us, it's like a hidden, like...
like a C.
Like you take it back.
Sumo.
Yeah,
but you want to say what you want to say?
Yeah.
It's a little touch, a little...
Yeah.
Okay. That's funny. Anyway, so that's my favorite, like, thing to put on rice and anything. Like, it makes everything so good.
It has, like a sourness to it. Yeah. It's really good.
My parents put in, like, a nondescript container and gave it to me. Like, I have a ton of it. But, like, because
Does your mom reuse containers, too?
Oh, yeah, all day.
Me, too. Same here. She'll just give me, like, some mat, or, like, she'll give me, like, when she gave my sister, like, chicken seasoning or something.
And it's just, always like, in, like, random things that they just kept forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. A little taste of the herb. Get it? Taste of the herb?
The spice of life.
So, we're just so Middle Eastern. We can't help it.
Oh, man.
Just a little spice of life.
Spice
anyway,
of
so
life.
That's what I ate.
Cool. Yeah. I'm glad we got some light stuff in this episode because my topic is kind of a downer, like always.
do you want to do it?
Yeah. So, if you guys have been awake in the past week or so, you've probably heard about this zero tolerance policy that Trump had for illegal migrants that were coming into the southern border. And
wait, what?
Just joking. And nearly like 2,500 minors were separated from their parents in the last 6 weeks after Trump announced the zero tolerance policy against illegal immigration. And the law stated that the minor can't be imprisoned with their parents because it's the parent, not the child, who committed this crime of coming here illegally. However, Trump yesterday on Wednesday signed a veto saying that this would stop and children would stop getting separated from their parents. But unfortunately, this does not help the kids that are already in government facilities. And I kind of wanted to talk about what happens when these kids go into these facilities, because Republicans refuse to blame Trump, and Trump and the GOP and the White House and Republicans, they all point their fingers at the Democrats because they repeatedly say that a congressional solution should be arrived at, implying that the Democrats are impeding this process. And then, meanwhile, the Democrats and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, they're blasting Trump, and she says, the president says, it's not my fault, I didn't do it. But you did do it. You did it to the Dreamers, and now you're doing it to the children. You can rescind this act in just a moment. And she said this after touring a new government holding center for children in the San Diego area. And then Mitch McConnell announced on Tuesday that all the Republicans in Congress are united in the stance that migrant kids should not be separated from their parents when they enter the U.S. But they also said that they hope Congress and mainly the Democrats can unite together and make a new law to change things rather than, quote, sparring back and forth. So it's just a lot of pointing fingers and no solution actually happening. So now that Trump has done this veto, it kind of just, it's really just to save face, because it's been like a moral outrage. The media has been covering this. There's video, there's photos, there's voice recordings of children crying and being separated from their parents. And Trump initially touted the zero tolerance policy against illegal immigration because he was concerned that he was perceived as weak. Right. And illegal immigration was like one of the main platforms of his campaign. And it did, like, as far as his quote unquote numbers go, it did really well for him. And people really reacted like highly, like they reacted positively when his base reacted positively, I should say, when he would talk about being firmer on illegal immigration. So he did the zero tolerance policy so it would prevent people from coming here to this country illegally. But it's just proven to be a huge media debacle and like a moral outrage. And children and even babies are being separated from their parents on a mass scale. And this is just traumatizing for these children. It's going to affect their psyches, and it's going to be so detrimental to their development to just have this trauma in their youth. So on Wednesday, as I said, he bowed to the pressure in the U.S., and he signed an executive order that the White House would keep families who cross into the U.S. illegally together. And he said, you're going to have a lot of happy people. As he signed the order, as if he was not fixing a problem that his own administration created. I feel like the only reason he did this is because the media storm was affecting his approval ratings and he wants to be elected again. But this damage control it's clear that there's just new complications that have arisen. And it's affected the White House's credibility, and it's just not possible to keep blaming Democrats for this mess. There's a big responsibility in the Trump campaign as well. It's because it was their whole stance about having zero tolerance policy.
But it is, just to be clear, this executive order doesn't fix anything.
Oh, no. It does nothing for the more than 2,300 children already separated from their parents, some of whom who have been held in cage-like conditions or have been sent to facilities all around the country.
But also now the thing said that they won't separate the parents, but they can hold them indefinitely, but they can't hold them indefinitely for more than 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
So then they get separated again.
Yeah. It doesn't do anything. It's a Band-Aid on a big bleeding gash.
It's literally nothing.
But on this news show called Press Play on NPR, they had this woman called Megan McKenna on, and she's part of this immigration rights group called Kids in Need of Defense. And she talked about what this process is like when a child goes into this facility after being separated from their parent. And it's a very traumatic process. Once they're separated, I'm just going to go through it. Once they're separated, a child is referred to the custody of the Department of Health and Human Services. There's an office in this department called the Office of Refugee Resettlement, or the ORR. The ORR is charged with the care, the custody, and the placement with a sponsor of an unaccompanied children. Traditionally, unaccompanied children have been the children who have come to the border without parents or legal guardians already. But now, of course, we're entering into a new territory, and many of these children are separated from their parents and going forth on their own immigration case, completely separate from their parent because their parent has been deported or detained. And we're seeing pictures of these children in cages in these facilities, and this is supposed to be, quote, temporary housing while the Health and Human Services and the ORR find a sponsor for these children. But they can spend up to 72 hours essentially in a cage, what they call, quote, customs and border protection, and while the ORR tries to find a bed in one of their facilities for them. The average amount a child spends in the ORR custody is now 70 days, whereas 2 years ago it was only a month. So it's more than doubled. And it's been very difficult to find sponsors for these kids because the ORR is tasked with finding a sponsor who could, originally they were trying to find a family member that was already here in the U.S. or a friend in the U.S. who could care for the child while the child is going through their own deportation proceedings. However, the administration recently issued an agreement in which it can share the sponsor information to ICE Foreign Enforcement.
Which is not good.
No. Because there could be undocumented people going about their lives in this household, and they could now also be a target for ICE apprehension. So fewer sponsors have been coming forward because there's this fear now. And this memo of understanding, it was passed in April of this year, and it's increased the fear and dramatically decreased the sponsor rate because some sponsors have been arrested. This memo makes it a policy. And previously, this information was protected.
And I want to say something. Remember a while back where that article came out that was like, whatever, 1,500 migrant children mm-hmm. are unaccounted for?
Yeah.
This lawyer, Josie Duffy Rice, put out this thread that was like, there's a reason for that and we shouldn't go looking for them, because most likely the reason they're unaccounted for is because I forget what that group was called, the organization that's supposed to be in charge of that. They are calling basically these houses and the calls are going unanswered is because these people don't want to be found, because they need to be protected, because most likely that they're in family members who have mm-hmm. potentially undocumented members in it. So they don't want anyone coming sniffing around. Yeah. That child is probably happy, safe. I mean, for the most part, we don't know if that's every case, but that's a big part of it, is a lot of these people are trying to
protect themselves and each other.
Yeah. Stay out of the light.
Yeah. And, This information was previously protected by the ORR, but since this quote-unquote memo of understanding was passed in April, it's become a policy now to report undocumented people, which is just a terrible, like, I don't know, it's making it harder for everybody. And so the kids are staying in these facilities for long periods of time. They're alone, they're traumatized in a land they don't know. Their asylum cases are moving forward very slowly, and many times the parents are deported and the children remain in the U.S. facilities. With a child that was separated from a parent, they came together as a family unit. Presumably they were going to apply for the U.S. protection as a family unit. But with the child separated from its parents, it makes it hard for immigrant rights groups like the Kids in Need of Defense. It makes it hard for them to contact the parents, and it makes it difficult to proceed with the child's case. Because on one hand, they want to protect the wishes of the parents in regards to the child's case. But if that parent is deported, number one, it's hard to even communicate with the parent or even find the parent. And two, it's hard to know how to even proceed with the case. If the parent wants the child to be sent back to the parents' homeland to be with them, or if the parent wants the child's immigration case to proceed on its own and to try to gain U.S. protection. But there have been situations where the child and parent have been separated for years in different countries, and the parent is left to make a very difficult decision in some cases to either not see their child, possibly for years, or to send their child home with them and give up on the chance they have to live a better life in the U.S. and seek asylum. And regardless, they're sending the parent back to the same situation they left, which is usually pretty shitty. And I'm going to get more into this after we take a quick commercial break. And we're back. I was just
real quick. I know I said before I didn't remember the name of the group of people who are supposed to be mm-hmm. in charge of finding out where the migrant children are, but they're called ORR.
Yeah.
Office of Refugee Resettlement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't want that group to find those kids. Apparently they're very bad.
Well, I brought them up a little bit earlier. So the ORR is a department inside the Department of Health and Human Services, and they're charged with the care, the custody, and the placement of a sponsor. But they're the ones that just signed this new memo that are able to find undocumented people within the household. But yeah, several Democratic representatives have been trying to see these facilities and like get a firsthand look. But they were actually Senator Bill Nelson and Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz. God, I'm like stuttering over everything today. My apologies. But they were barred from seeing a Florida child migrant facility this past week. And Wasserman Schultz said, "This is absolutely an obstruction and blocking and a cover-up by President Trump and Secretary Nielsen, who should resign because she's disqualified from a position of public trust." Senator Bill Bill Nelson, who's a senator, a Democratic senator, he accused the Trump administration of a cover-up after the officials denied him entry on Tuesday to a detention center for migrant children in South Florida, where he had hoped to survey living conditions. And him and Representative Wasserman Schultz, who are both Florida Democrats, they went to the contractor-run Homestead Temporary Shelter for Unaccompanied Children following reports that it was receiving detained migrant children who had arrived in this country illegally. And it said that the facility was being used for an estimated 100 or 1,000 children, aged mostly 13 to 17, most of whom had arrived here, unaccompanied minors, and about 10% of them being separated from their families at the border. And she said two other facilities like this are being used in South Florida for younger children. Nelson said it's an affront to the senior senator of the state that an agency head would tell me that I would not have entrance into a federally funded facility where the lives and the health of children are at stake. So there's obviously like some shady shit happening here. And if you've seen any of these photos of these children being apprehended and detained, it's really heartbreaking. And actually, if you saw the front cover of Time magazine today, guess what? President Trump finally made the cover, and it's really unflattering. It's basically him towering over a crying child. This crying child was in a photo that's been circulating a lot. She was a two-year-old Honduran girl crying as her mother was being detained in McAllen, Texas. So her photo is being used on the Time cover, and all it says in white lettering is "Welcome to America." She's like crying, looking up at him, at Trump, and it's a very powerful cover. And I'm glad that Time is taking a stance on this, because I think Trump repeatedly like wanted to be like Person of the Year and be on the cover of Time, and look, you finally have it. But John Moore,
you've made it.
Yeah, John Moore is a Pulitzer Prize winning photographer for Getty Images, and he was the one that he's been photographing immigrants crossing into the U.S.-Mexico border for years, and this is one of his pictures that has become the most visible symbol of the immigration debate in America. And he's quoted about this photo saying, "This one was tough for me. As soon as it was over, they were put into a van. I had to stop and take deep breaths.
Wow.
All I wanted to do was pick this girl up, but I couldn't." And she just kept crying. It's heartbreaking and really sad. And it makes me sick to my stomach. There have been a lot of really worthwhile causes to donate to, though. There's one on Facebook that's been it's been circulating everywhere. A friend of a friend actually like founded it, and I'm very like proud to even like know this person, like even like a degree of separation away. But it's called Reunite an Immigrant Parent with Their Child on Facebook. Please look at the link in our footnotes. I'll put it in there, but you can just donate even a little bit. A little over 14 million have been raised. 15 million is the goal, and a lot of people have already donated. I donated. It's just they're raising money for a company to help these vulnerable members of our society to ensure they receive advocacy and fair legal representation. And their two main goals is to directly fund bonds to allow parents to reclaim their detained children and to ensure legal representation for every separated family and unaccompanied child in Texas's immigration courts. So, because last year, 76% of kids, over 13,000 kids, did not have representation. So, they're trying to combat that, and it's a very amazing cause. So, if you can, you can donate.
Can you repeat what it's called again?
It is called Reunite a Child, an Immigrant Parent with Their Child. And it's a fundraiser for a company called RAICES, but it's spelled R-A-I-C-E-S. And it'll be on our footnotes. And It's just like the people that are defending this zero tolerance policy, and now I guess it's old news because he signed an act for it or a executive order for it, but it's probably not going to change anything. But it just chills. It just like gives me chills to think the degree that like people will accept anything, white people especially will accept anything as being okay because people didn't follow the rules. Like it's like there you still have a moral responsibility to have a fucking heart. And yeah,
what scares me the most is if any of this gets cleaned up, that there's going to be no files that tell you which kid goes to which parent.
Yeah, that's the hardest part, because once you fucking deport a parent, like, they're impossible to find.
It just also feels like this administration does not keep any records, so
And most, a lot of the times, these parents come from unfortunate situations where maybe they don't know a lot of English. They're seeking help, and they're met at the border with the opposite of that, with harshness and whatever. But the last thing I do want to say, because the U.S. is committing truly a horrid human rights violations, is that the U.S. quit the U.N. Human Rights Council because it said it was anti-Israel. And the Trump administration withdrew from the United Nations Human Rights Council on Tuesday, which is what they said they would do because they had been, the U.S. was criticizing it for being biased against Israel. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo criticized it because it has a long-standing bias against Israel. And Nikki Haley, trash of
Bitchy
the year,
Haley.
Yeah, trash human of the year, said for too long the Human Rights Council has been a protector of human rights abusers and a cesspool of political bias.
Said the person separating children from their fucking families.
Yeah. She said the decision was an affirmation of the U.S. respect for human rights. Are you fucking kidding me? They don't want to be a part of a hypocritical and self-serving organization that makes a mockery of human rights.
This is all because of all those people who didn't want to accept that Jerusalem the capital of Israel.
But it's so stupid, and this article goes into a lot of detail, and you guys should definitely check it out. But
my favorite part is that Russia now wants that spot, which is just like, oh, the kings and queens of human rights. Yeah. Next thing we know, fucking Saudi Arabia will be like, wait, we're actually like known for what like great human rights policies we have. So we should have the spot.
But the council is scheduled to discuss Israel and Palestinian territories on July 2nd, according to its agenda. And the Trump administration, its withdrawal from this council is a sad reflection of its one-dimensional human rights policy. Defending Israeli abuses from criticism takes precedence above all else. This is what the Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth said in a statement. Other governments will have to redouble their efforts to ensure the council addresses the world's most serious human rights problems. And the same council is also looking into human rights violations and the children rights after the U.S. has been separating kids from their families. And I don't think it's any coincidence that the U.S. pulled out as soon as this was being investigated. And the last thing I want to do before I pass the baton is that Fox News said that some of these detention camps, aka basically prisons, are like summer camps for children. And that some of these kids are actors. And I wanted to play like a 15-second clip of
Is it of Corey Lewandowski?
Yeah.
Oh, this shit makes me want to rip people's eyeballs out.
It's so basically
Corey Lewandowski should be plucked from the surface of the earth, ripped apart, and then just burned alive.
Just thrown into the abyss. Basically, the person that's going to be talking first is this man called Zach Petkansas. And he's describing a situation that he saw at the border of the U.S. and Mexico.
I read today about a 10-year-old girl with Down syndrome who was taken from her mother and put in a cage. Read about did you say want to a 10-year-old with Down syndrome
what
being
I
taken
said
from
is
her
you
mother?
Can pick anything
How
you
dare
want
you?
Up, but the bottom line
How
is very clear.
You?
When you cross
How absolutely
the border
dare you,
illegally,
sir?
You
How
have
dare
given
you?
Up the...
That's all I wanted to play. Just the the nerve that some of these people have to defend a truly abhorrent act is absurd. And as Anna said, Corey Lewandowski needs to be burned at the stake.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah. But yeah.
Wah, how about when you lose your job and you lose all your money and your endorsements because
we'll
everyone
say, womp,
starts
womp.
Boycotting your fucking advertisers on your trash ass show?
Yeah.
Like, womp womp. The bottom line is you're a racist piece of shit.
Yeah.
And you have no humanity and your ability to feel empathy doesn't exist. So, Loki, you're probably a sociopath.
Yeah.
And I hope your family leaves you. And I bet your children hate you if you have any. They probably think you're a dickhead and look like a penis boy.
But this clip,
I mean,
yeah,
that's fucked up.
It is fucked up. This clip will be on our footnotes, just proving that Fox News is garbage. And
yeah,
if you can, please
donate
to a cause.
A lot of the big dogs are pulling out, like threatening to leave, because it's just working with a network like that is just not worth it anymore, because Fox News is actual trash and they don't seem to understand.
Yeah.
What
but they are getting bought
terrible.
Out by Disney now. Even like people that are involved in the entertainment side of Fox are thinking of leaving, but things are going to be changing since Disney's taking over. So we'll see what happens.
Let's see. Let's get rid of fucking Geraldo.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Bill
All
O'Reilly.
Of them. All of them.
Yeah. So
I feel crazy.
So after that thrilling time, what are you going to talk about with us today?
I'm going to talk about the World Cup. That's my like Euro trash. They always play this like weird Euro trash music on Daily Zeitgeist when they talk about the World Cup.
Oh,
and
really?
I'm like, yeah, that's spot on. Soccer is such a Euro trash sport. And I am not saying that.
You mean football?
Football is such a Euro trash sport. And I'm not saying that in a fucked up way. It's in my blood.
No, I mean,
Euro trash is in my blood. As we saw in our genetic ancestry results.
Yeah. 0.3%, right? Euro trash.
0.3% Euro trash. That's me, baby. Anyway, so like I said, I grew up playing soccer. I grew up watching football, watching the World Cup. Used to go to games all the time when I was young, you know, when Azizi played for the Earthquake. Azizi was like one of the most legendary Iranian players, and he came and played for an American, MLS. So Azizi came and played for the Earthquake in San Jose, and we used to go watch it. It was so much fun. And then I remember one time the Iranian team came and toured the U.S., and they came to our like local mosque, and we went and we got soccer balls signed, and it was crazy.
That's really fun.
It was fucking wild.
Yeah, in Syria, soccer's a big deal, or football's a big deal, too. And, like, there's this one anime that my cousins always watched that was, like, dubbed in Arabic called Captain Majid. And it was just, like, this, like, crazy anime that was just, like, I don't know, just fun.
It's wild. Anyway,
Captain Majid fans out there, represent.
Oh. Anyway, so the real reason I want to talk, because, you know, currently Iran is in the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
They took their bracket by storm, a.k.a. they beat Morocco on a technicality because Morocco scored a goal for them. And then Spain and Portugal tied.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that put them in the first place in their bracket. And then they went to play Spain and they lost to Spain 1-0. And the goal that Spain got was also like kind of a weak goal because two players went to kick it at once and it just bounced into the goal. It was kind of crazy. Which is, Spain's a strong team, so mm-hmm. that was cool that they were able to hold them off. They go to play Portugal next. They will have played them by the time this episode drops, so just, I don't know. You'll know the future. So they're a pretty decent team, you know? Like, yeah. They're not the best team, but they're a strong team, and they have a really good coach whose name is Carlos Quirez. I know I'm saying that last name wrong. I always say it wrong. Carlos Quirez. I'm so sorry to my Latinx fans. just assuming I have a huge Latinx fan population. So the crazy thing about the Iran soccer team is they had to purchase everything themselves. And there was this huge controversy because of obviously there's sanctions against the country of Iran. Mm-hmm. So these big companies can't pay for, or they can't like sponsor these teams and give them things. So everyone has to pay for the like cleats and whatnot and jerseys themselves. And that really upset a lot of soccer fans because they're like, keep politics out of it. This is the World mm-hmm. Cup. We shouldn't have to worry about this. And so the huge controversy stemmed from Nike, who said they would not provide cleats to the Iranian soccer team
what?
Ahead and during the World Cup because of economic sanctions against Iran. And this, of course, follows, you know, Trump administration's mm-hmm. bullshit decision to withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal earlier this year. And because of that, that makes it so that Nike will not provide cleats to the Iranians. And they put out a statement and they said, U.S. sanctions mean that as a U.S. company, Nike cannot supply shoes to players in the Iranian national team at this time. Sanctions applicable to Nike have been in place for many years and are enforceable by law. So that means that the teams had to basically get their own cleats to plays wow. in this huge goddamn yeah. tournament. And on that note, there's so much more information I want to put out about this Nike situation, but we will do that right after this break. And we are back. So I was talking about how Nike said they're not going to give any cleats to the Iran team because of sanctions against the country. So the thing is that the team, the Iranian team, Team Melli, as they're known in Iran, they're allowed to go and buy shoes from Nike. They just can't be given anything. So they can mm-hmm. go themselves and blah, blah, blah.
They just can't go be to a store. By yeah. them.
So like many of the players who I think all but 9 players play in Europe and they have deals from Nike because they play on these clubs, international clubs. And they're, because their team is sponsored, they're required to wear either Nike, Adidas, Puma, all that. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like stressful. You're like, okay, well now this sucks. We have to do this. And Jamal Abdi, vice president of policy of the National Iranian American Council, which is like this nonprofit that focuses on Iranian American relations, they said, we are disappointed that Nike has boycotted Iran's World Cup players by refusing to provide shoes to the Iranian national team. We call on the U.S. government to take immediate steps to address the shameful situation and that Nike actively seek a resolution. FIFA should also take necessary steps to address this issue and ensure that none of the teams in the World Cup are subject to double standards. Governments that drag politics into international sporting events, including Iran itself, when it boycotts matches with Israel, face well-deserved admonishment. The situation is unfortunately no different. Events like the World Cup and the Olympics are meant to rise above disputes between nations and serve as an example of what unites us, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. They don't... Anyway, so... So Adidas, a German-based company, it provides Iran's uniforms, but they told CNBC that they can't sponsor the team, but they were selling kits for a discount for them, which is just, it's more even shittier. But I read this article in the Washington Post that Eric Ferrari, interesting name, he's a Washington lawyer who specializes in sanctions, says that legally Nike is correct. However, the company could have easily applied for a license from the Treasury Department Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC, which oversees sanctions, implementations, and enforcement. They have a long history of granting authorizations so as to not impede international sports competitions. Under the current administration, the OFAC has been very strict in its licensing policy, but it still seems like something that should have been licensed. So they could have made the effort. Mm-hmm. They just kind of chose not to. And it kind of like reinforces the perception that Iran's athletes are being like unfairly ostracized at an event that they should have the same advantages of other teams from other countries. So it's not great. Iran's coach Carlos Quiroz, never know how to say that. I like listened to videos to how to say his name, and I forgot everything. So he like came at Nike and he was like, "You guys should apologize." And he said, "My duty is to create happiness, fun, and entertainment for the people." And he's Portuguese, and he's like kind of a legendary coach. And he said, "Iran is a country rich in tradition and thousands of years of history. It's just a pity that the perception of Iran around the world is not the right or real one, nor the one the Iranian people deserve." And he says that the Nike's move is also already having the effect of rallying support around the Iranian national team. It helps that Quiroz is like a known coach, and he like lobbies for them. And he was like a coach for like Zidane Zidane, Cristiano Ronaldo, David Beckham. Like, he's coached some of the greatest players. And so Karim Ansari Fard, who is the forward on the team, he told ESPN, "What Nike did to us was very wrong. I can tell you as a footballer, we didn't compare diplomatic and political problems to sports." And then Quirara says, "I've never in all my career seen players deliver so much after receiving so little as I have with these Iran boys." So, you know, they're doing what they can in, you know, this kind of awkward situation. And Quiroz goes on to say, "We struggle to travel, to have training camps, to bring opponents, to buy equipment. Even buying shirts is a challenge. But these challenges helped me fall in love with Iran. These difficulties become a source of inspiration to the people. It makes them more united to fight for their country. These boys deserve a smile from the rest of the world." So, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Like, I'm sure people, when Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, they didn't really understand the implications and, like, the domino effect it would have for, like, everything.
Right. So they kind of, they had to scramble. They asked, some of them asked non-Iranian players on their club teams to loan them cleats or boots. Or they have, like, friends who acquired them, and simply others have just gone out and bought their own at a store.
Right.
To play for the World Cup.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's really crazy. And Iran's jerseys, like I said earlier, they were made by the rival manufacturer Adidas. So it's a bit of a mess. Let me tell you. The Adidas's company CEO Kasper Rorstad said, "We equipped the Iranian team because a lot of the Iranians love football, and at the end of the day, we believe in sport. We believe that through sport, we have the power to change lives. If we start being a political engine, then we don't actually have the freedom to do what we want to do. And that's really making people's lives better." So, I mean, at least Adidas being chill. I do think Nike is being a little bitch. They knew what they were doing. They're being dicks. The other shitty thing is that because they're not provided with sponsored jerseys, the Iran World Cup jerseys are not available on FIFA's online website.
Oh.
Or store, excuse me. Which, unlike all the other teams, they're there and you can buy them, and it's fucked up. So the Iranian team basically had to buy their own jerseys, and they had to customize their own jerseys themselves. So you can't actually, if your favorite player's on the team, you cannot go and buy the jersey for them. So I wanted to play this New York Times video made by Nilo Tabrizi, who is a New York Times video producer, and she's great. And I wanted to play this where she kind of breaks down the what's up with the jerseys. So here you go.
"Almost everything Iran does on the world stage seems to be a reflection of global politics. And that extends all the way to the country's World Cup uniforms. International sanctions dictate what the country's national team can wear or can't. Let's start with the jersey. Typically, companies like Adidas, Puma, or Nike fight to sign contracts with World Cup teams and pay them millions of dollars to wear their jerseys. But it's a different story for Iran. Sanctions have made sportswear companies wary of sponsoring the team's uniforms. Iran ended up signing a contract with Givova, an Italian sports brand. But Iranian athletes and media complained that the quality wasn't great. The team then decided to use Adidas jerseys, but they had to buy them themselves, instead of being offered a traditional sponsorship.
ایران نه تنها از آدیداس پولی دریافت نمی کرد که حتی برای پوشیدن لباس به آدیداس پول هم می داد. البته افتخار فدراسیون فوتبال این بود که پیراهن‌ها رو با تخفیف 70% از آدیداس می خره.
They even had to customize their own jerseys. Here in the team's World Cup photo shoot, look at Ramin Rezaian's jersey. It appears that his number is placed upside down. The jerseys had other issues too.
یکی از تصاویر به یاد موندنی بازی دوستانه تیم ملی با تونس یقه پاره پیراهن میلاد محمدی بود.
This do-it-yourself approach to jerseys also means Team Iran's World Cup uniform isn't available for fans to buy. Now, let's take a look at the shoes. Saman Qoddos is a dual Swedish and Iranian national. He's a striker for Östersunds FK, a Swedish football club, and he has a sponsorship with Nike for cleats. But now that he's playing for Team Iran in the World Cup, Nike won't supply him with shoes. The company says U.S. sanctions mean that, as a U.S. company, Nike cannot supply shoes to players in the Iranian national team at this time. But Iran is pushing forward. They're one of the best teams in Asia and are heading to Russia, with some experts saying they have an outside shot at some big upsets, no matter what kind of jersey they're wearing.
So yeah, there was some Farsi in there that I wanted you guys to just like try and understand. But basically what they're saying is a lot of the jerseys were like ripping because the quality isn't as good.
That's just
as
so
what
sad.
You would ideally prefer.
That's
it is sad. But what are you going to do? This is the world we live in. Mm. Nobody cares about Iran. It's sad, but it's true. So yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, just to bring light that like even as you're seeing these Iranian players, if you're watching the World Cup, if you're seeing these Iranian players do well, just know that no one is supporting them.
No.
Corporate companies, at least.
And every other team has corporate sponsorship, and that helps them a lot, whether it's either, like, as you can tell, buying a fucking uniform or buying shoes. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to talk about.
That was very interesting. And football.
Football.
Go!
I love watching soccer.
It's very...
I don't like that it's all so early in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's almost... it's frustrating.
Cristiano Ronaldo made, like, an insane goal last week that, like, defied gravity.
That where he, like, bent it, like,
Yeah. Him. Like, how does it even happen? It was going one way in the air, and then it just, like, turned on its own in mid-air. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, he bent it like Beckham.
It's crazy.
That's what they do, man.
It's just, it's crazy. It blows. It's like magic in real life. It's like an episode of Captain Magic.
I know.
Yeah.
Good times.
Good times.
I'm fine with ending it here because I'm tired.
Okay.
I'm so tired.
Should we read any reviews or maybe like, do you want a personal talk or we can just end it? I mean.
I'm pretty lazy.
Okay.
I could call it a year right now. I'm so tired. I've been like excessively tired these days.
No,
I'm also on a diet now.
What kind of diet?
Nothing. I'm just trying to eat better.
That's a good. I mean, I think everyone.
And by diet, I just mean I'm just eating like salad versus like, I don't know, a burger.
Yeah.
It's a low key diet. It's not really a good diet.
Do what makes you feel good, and what makes just eat what makes you feel good, and don't be too neurotic about it, and you'll be happier. You know? Yeah. The psychiatrist that I left... So my original psychiatrist...
The one that wouldn't respond?
I left her a voicemail maybe a month ago.
Yeah.
Her office finally got back to me this afternoon, asked me to come in today.
Ugh.
And I was like, bitch, I'm working.
Yeah.
I'm working for the next month. Like, I don't know what I'm going... Like, when am I going to have time to see you? And I was... I mean, I feel like I'm getting meaner as I grow up. But, like, I was just very harsh on the phone to the receptionist.
But that's real, though. You've been trying to reach them forever, and then they call and ask you to come same day. It's like, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
I'm not sitting around at home. I have to pay my rent.
Yeah. So I made an appointment when this job that I'm on is over. But yeah. Oh, my God. Also, okay. This job I'm on. So I'm working on a commercial right now. And I can't tell you the details because I will get fired. But I just want to tell you that we pitched the job like creatively as having like two leads that were African American. Uh-huh. And one of them, and then the third guy was supposed to be Latino. Like, that's what the character was pitched as.
Yeah.
Guess the fuck what?
They're all white.
They're all white now.
Oh my God.
One of them, one of the characters was legitimately named Daquan. He's now Derek. FKA Daquan.
Damn.
Yeah, I just, it makes me livid. It just makes me, yeah, I don't know. I just, I was sitting in my,
Is it a Nike ad?
No, it's not a Nike
find
ad.
Any reason to be a dick to Nike these days.
But yeah, it's just the world. Just fucking whitey's taking over. Also, one of our reviews said, like, they refer to themselves as a whitey. So I feel like I can use that term again. Someone said it was mean, but I like the term whitey. It's kind of endearing and it makes me laugh, so... Sophie's giving me two thumbs up, and she's
shout
white.
Out to the whitey.
Yeah,
whitey. So yeah, you can find all our footnotes from today at ethnicallyambiguouspod.com.
Mm-hmm. Please go so you can look at this fundraiser that's going on for the children that are being separated from their parents. It's almost a 5 million donate. They've almost reached a $5 million. Sum, and you can help them get there. It's a really good cause, and what's going on right now is really just a human tragedy, and it's happening in this country. So just you can do your part just to try and help.
Yes, and I'll put Nilo Tabrizi's video in the footnotes so you can watch it and see the parts in Farsi that you may not have understood.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were Iruni and you didn't understand it, type.
Yeah, and you can follow us on Instagram at ethnicallyamb IG and on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, and we post we keep pretty updated on our Twitter because this podcast is only weekly. We like to keep up to date on Twitter with news articles and stuff, so please hit us a follow. And
Instagram, did you say?
Yeah, I said Instagram. And
you can follow me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh.
And on Twitter, I am Shereen Y, SHERENWHY. And on Instagram, I'm Shiro Hero, SHEERO HERO. But while you're on, if you're bored, go to iTunes or your podcast app and leave us a nice review. That's 5 stars, no less, because it helps us just stay relevant and get our podcast out there if y'all write reviews and make it like a thing you do.
World Cup!
Go!
I think it's really funny that the World Cup main theme is the Seven Nation Army beginning. They just loop it
oh
from White Stripes.
Wait, seriously?
It's yeah. And then when the more I listen to it, I'm like, God, this is so Russia. But yeah, what are you going to do? Also, if Russia wins every single game, come on, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Too
the
easy.
World is rigged.
All right. Sharere.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to bite that bebe butt?
I'd bite ass. That bebe butt ass.